Hello, Zuko here. But I guess you probably already know me.
You guys here for a rematch?
Negatory!
I think it's time I joined your group and taught the Avatar firebending.
Zuko! Yes! Why would I be expecting anyone different?
Greetings, my good Hotman.
We've been through so many things together.
Baby, you're my forever girl.
It'll be okay. It's not forever.
That's what I'd say, too.
Hotman? Hotman? Hotman?
My first girlfriend turned into the moon. That's rough, buddy.
Hotman? Hotman?
There. I got a pretty good look at you.
Let them rot.
I'll take that as a thank you.
Stay flaming, Hotman.
Stop calling me that.
Shh. I'm trying to watch.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender podcast for DonBuFang.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Sam.
Hola.
Ben.
What's up?
Jeff.
Hello.
Michelle.
Hello.
Michelle Jones. And Josh.
What?
Hi.
Oh, that was a little weird, Josh.
I'm so excited to be on this podcast.
Shut up. Okay. This is our 47th podcast. We'll be discussing assorted stuff throughout the whole thing. I think it's, I'm going to call it more finale discussion, because that's basically what it is. If you're listening right now, Comic-Con news is probably already broken. We will not be covering that during this, because the panel literally just ended when we're recording, and I don't know, too risky. I want to wait for all the information to be out. So tomorrow night, or probably tonight, if you're listening to it on Saturday. Saturday, July 27th, we'll record Saturday, July 27th. I'll have it up Sunday morning for you guys. So that's that. I have no idea what you're listening to in the background, so hopefully it makes sense.
You could be listening to Smooth by Santana and Rob Johnson.
Because that is no relation to the finale, so I don't think so.
You could call it, you should play a Crazy by, what's her butt?
What's her butt?
The one lady, because of Crazula. You should play Crazy.
Yeah, oh, maybe.
No,
Ben, no.
I'm so crazy.
Podcast at DonBuFang.net. Email us. I've been getting some good emails from you guys. Keep them coming. I'll answer them eventually. Don't know. I'm reading them. I mean, none of them are really, like, answer right away emails. And we'll definitely have one more mailbag before we end this whole thing. So, yeah, let's get right into it. News ratings for Avatar. Let me pull up the exact ratings for the finale. Here we are. Okay, so this is for total cable primetime shows. The Avatar finale ranked fourth among primetime shows and was the first kid-related show this week. I mean, obviously. 5.6 million viewers. Also, in the top 15 primetime cable shows, Ember Island Players on Friday got 4.5 million. The Southern Raiders on Thursday got 4.2 million. And the Boiling Rock on Wednesday got 4 million. So, definitely positive from 317, 316, and 314, 315. Charting at above 4 million. That was impressive. Finale, it's about what I expected. It's good, but it wasn't amazing. I mean, you could say it was amazing, because it blew out any past Avatar ratings. It definitely, Nick pulled it off, guys, and you got to give him credit here. It's in the summer, but they advertised the heck out of it, and it got 5.6 million in the summer, on a Saturday night.
I would like to comment, though, that I saw probably the exact same amount of commercials for iCarly Double Date Night that I did for Avatar.
So let's hope that gets 5.6 million, too, then.
No, it aired tonight.
Or not hope, yeah.
I have to admit I watched it, and
was it good?
I don't think it was quite on the same level as it.
Okay, well, anyway. So yeah, it was amazing ratings for summer and Saturday night. I think if Nick handled the overall airing better, it could have gotten into the six if it was in April or May. But, you know, I'm pretty satisfied overall with the ratings here. And, panel news, yeah, we're not doing that right now, so let's move on. I just want to share a quick story before we get to anything. I was in New Jersey and went into the city for a couple days, New York City, over the week, and I was in Times Square, and there was an advertisement, like a billboardish thing with lights. It was pretty plain. It was just like standard yellow lights, and it was changing on Nick shows. It was actually about a Nick one, and for 10 seconds in Times Square, it showed Avatar, and it was like a picture of Aang, and it was like he needs to go on a journey whether he wants to or not, and they had the tagline. It said, "Watch Avatar on Nick." So I was standing there in Times Square, and I saw Avatar for like 10 seconds up there on this thing. And it was pretty epic. And, I mean, next it flashed iCarly, so that took a little bit away from it. But the fact that Avatar was in Times Square and I was seeing it on this huge board, that was pretty amazing. So, I don't know, it just shows how big this could be, I guess, and how good Avatar's gotten here.
I need to go to Times Square more.
Yeah. Pretty epic place. Anyway, let's start with our finale discussion, I guess. First, thank you guys for writing in. I probably got like 10 emails saying the epic hexagon was the turtle, lion turtle shell. And I never thought of that. I really never did. So thank you.
I mentioned I was going to watch it again right after we recorded last. And I was watching it and I got it and I was like, so, headbanging.
Yeah, I know, really. But I was like, why didn't I think of that? Because I watched it for a third time again today and I still didn't see it until I got home and I read all the emails. So it's a little bit embarrassing. I think of
that. Yeah, just a little.
And then someone in email said, Wikipedia entry says turtle shells are made up of hexagons, so it reinforces it even more. Josh/ Jeff, talk about the lion turtle, what you want to do.
Oh, I was just going to say that I don't think anybody, when I listened to it, I couldn't be here Saturday night for the podcast because of things that happened at home, but I listened to it the next day, and did you miss discussing that they alluded to it in 2:10,
or did we never talk about time?
Oh, because I didn't see the screenshot until right after the podcast. So yeah, we haven't gotten to that yet.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, there was this.
That was really it. Was just the shell is the epic hexagon or the epic gon, and and that it was from 2:10. Actually, my friend that credit goes to my friend Lauren because she pointed out that was from 2:10.
Anyone want to explain like the situation it arose from in 2:10? Like what?
They were just
They had just gotten into the library and Aang was searching through the books and stuff, and he found a picture of a giant lion turtle.
Oh, that's
and
pretty
he
good.
Goes, hey,
good.
Look at these lion turtle things.
Wait, he actually said lion turtle?
Yeah, he said, hey, look at these weird lion turtle things, and Sokka said, I've seen weirder.
That's pretty ironic, yeah.
So and ironic now.
Yeah.
And we got some confirmation.
And then,
that was illusion.
Yeah, and then Master Pian Dao had lion turtle statues all over his garden.
Ah, did he?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, yeah, I forgot.
That's pretty awesome. I didn't even see that. Mm. Yeah, so pretty epic hexagons, a lot of places there, apparently.
So it's so we that tells us, though, that they knew that the lion turtle was going to happen, because, well, I don't know. I don't want to talk about it.
Although they knew, I mean, they had to have known. Well, yeah, this is one of the things I'm pretty sure they had planned forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, someone keep talking while I find something. Anything else about the lion turtle we need to know?
I mean, it was in the pilot.
But this
it was?
It was?
Plus? Yeah, it was, like, the introduction, like, Aang's...
Really?
I don't know how to explain it. Yeah, it was.
I'm gonna watch it right now. Where was it?
It was, like, the I'll forget. The opening scene, yeah. Wait, no. You know what? Never mind.
Oh, I think I remember seeing that in the, Earthbending.
It was really funny, because even without listening to the podcast, I had the same thought that the lion turtle was hard to hear, but for some reason, the second time I watched it, I just listened a little bit harder and I was able to hear everything.
Yeah, I mean, once I read what it actually was, it seemed perfectly clear. So, I mean, yeah, they could have done it.
Well, no, I mean, before I even listened to the podcast.
Oh, really? Yeah, I mean, yeah, second time, I guess, better.
And I mean, it would have been heightened attention because I wanted to catch what it said.
Yeah.
And
also, my crappy sound quality was yelling at the TV.
That something.
I was like, why can't I understand? And I knew it was coming, too, from the Toon Zone interview. I was, like, one of the most important characters. I knew that was the lion turtle, so... But still...
I just knew he was saying something wise and symbolic.
Yeah.
Who voiced the lion turtle, do we know?
Amazing voice acting by Kevin Michael Richardson, who also voiced Tyro, Haru's dad. He's very talented and did a great job. I mean, obviously, they distorted his voice a little bit, but...
I have a question. I mean, we're kind of skipping... Do we want to save it for voice actors when we get down to that?
For... I don't know. Let's get into finale music, because I'm prepared right now.
Finale music was just...
amazing.
I was disappointed that you didn't talk about it. I mean, I know you didn't
have time. Yeah, now I know. I watched it a couple more times. Now I know the music, so now let's get into it.
It's like...
So yeah, here's my favorite finale music. Take a listen. It's from, I think it's, I'm calling it the Preparing for Battle theme. It's in the beginning of 320, right before you get ready. And, I don't know, this may be a little early, so let's just see if it's playing right now. Oops. Okay, I lost it. Someone talk about the...
I'd like for Jeff to play it after Dylan's done. Go ahead and get it ready. The Azula versus Zuko Agni Kai music. That was just
that was my favorite.
This is where the music actually almost contributed to the plot, because it was so just epically beautiful, and it was sharp.
I do want to talk about that
a little bit. And it really almost was in contrast to the scene that was at the mental. I mean.
It wasn't your typical action music.
Yes, with the drums and stuff.
Even if you have the sound turned off and you're just watching the firebending itself was the most, in my opinion, it was the most beautiful animation. Besides 110, it was the most beautiful animation in the entire.
110?
Jet? Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, Jet's animation was just absolutely...
That's interesting. I didn't notice that too much. Okay, I have the Preparing for Battle music here.
But that's kind of off topic.
Let me do this one first, then we'll get into the whole
thing. Oh, okay.
This is 512, in case anyone's watching. It's in the background. Preparing for Battle. This is the scene where they like kind of zoom in on Ozai, and it's pretty epic CGI here.
I really love this bit.
That's got to be one of my top three moments of the finale. That is so epic.
Those strings are amazing.
Oh,
dun,
yeah.
Dun, 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 if you can hear that, so I was referring to.
Before we get into Azula Zuko, one more comment. I'm not sure how you'd feel about this, Dylan, but I would really appreciate it if you would post the link to the online petition for the series soundtrack. Especially after all of this amazing... I mean, I'm sure that about 95% of the podcast listeners have probably already signed it.
Yeah,
but
I've signed it multiple times.
I mean, if there are people that have not signed it, I think you definitely need to find it online. Find it. We're up to about 6,000 signatures now, I think, and it really needs to happen. I'd be more pleased if the series soundtrack happened than if a box set of all three seasons came out. Honestly,
there's so much music in the show; it's kind of hard to fit it all into one CD. So
they have highlights, and there's stuff on the Track Team MySpace too. But yeah. I mean, I really, really want this to have it done.
Yeah,
and.
Okay. I'll post a link to it if you remember.
Is it James? And I'm kind of skimming off topic, just a really, really quick here. Is James Newton Howard the one that does all the soundtracks for M. Night?
I don't know.
Okay, someone back me up on that. I can't remember.
Let's get back to the finale music here. So here's the Azula Zuko music. I think I have it up from the Agni Kai. That's just a sample there. That's pretty epic right there.
Yeah. And I just, the thing I want to say about this is, you look at the firebending, it's the most beautiful animation in the series. You look at the, you listen to the music, it's probably, I think it's the most beautiful music in the series.
But I disagree on both points, but keep going.
Beautiful. I'm not talking about epic, I'm talking about beautiful.
I know, and I'd actually, this maybe is, my personal favorite animation is from the final scene, and the favorite music from the final scene, so.
Oh.
That's just me, though.
Of course.
Okay.
Not of course, seriously, that's so beautiful.
Well, anyway.
I think that this is...
Yeah, Michelle?
Oh, I think that this is the first time that I've, like, actively noticed the new music in the, like, in the finale. I mean, before I always kind of heard it in the back of my mind, but this is the first time where it really jumped out at me.
Yeah.
And, like, it popped out and said, this is something special.
Like, I melted when I heard this music with Azula and Zuko. I mean, I'll talk more about Azula. Believe me, I'm talking more about Azula later. But, I mean, just, it almost goes more with the contrast theme of Azula versus Zuko, you know, pure cold-blooded evil versus epic, you know, epic confusion and complicated, red versus blue, and I think it almost takes that one step further with the beautiful animation and beautiful music against this, admittedly, it's almost rather violent, you know, thing that they're, a violent fight that they're having right now. And yeah. I just thought, and I just, every time I watch this, I just melt and just sink into my seat and just absorb it all. And that's why, I mean, that's just, that's my favorite part of the entire, I almost want to say my favorite part of the entire series. Mm. I almost want to say that.
Yeah, I think
it may be pushing it, but it's really close. Mm. It's definitely top three.
Okay.
And I was actually,
I'm talking entire series.
Okay. And yeah, well, I think let's get into that towards the end of the favorite moments of the entire series. Jeff?
I just want to say, I was going back to watch, like, the Boiling Rock and their duel on top of the gondola, and, I mean, I just came off from watching the finale, and I was like, this is pathetically weak. Is this the best you can do? It's kind of ruined all those off-fire scenes for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the music perfectly illustrates, it's, like, goes so well with Azula's down.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the music.
I'm shifting. Oh, sorry. Trying to get back on topic here. I think it just goes so well with Azula, and that was my favorite part of it. Crazy Azula, and we have this music here. It's kind of like, to me, it illustrates a sad ending to Azula's, I guess, era as one of the most powerful people in the world, Avatar world. And she's just going down, and this music, I think, perfectly illustrates that, to my view. And okay, any other finale music that really stands out here?
I have...
The ending credits?
Oh, yeah, the ending.
Oh, yeah.
Jeff, you want to talk about that?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, this is more epic than that, preparing for battle music, I think.
No, I love
this. This is my theme music, and, yeah, here we go.
Like, I'm
so glad they changed it, because I was worried they were going to start in with the drums and chanting, and, like, in the whole moment.
I'm as close to tears right now as I was when I first watched the finale. Like, that music,
perfect credits music, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
and I'd love to hear, I really want to see an interview from another, I mean, the track team's done so many interviews in the past, so I want to hear another one after the finale about where does this come from, like, how are they producing this music, how are they doing the other ones? Specifically about the finale, where they get the idea from the end theme song, because it's so epic.
Well, the little side point I was trying to make earlier about James Newton Howard, I was right. James Newton Howard is the one that does all the music for M. Night's movies. And I don't know who, I'm pretty sure about half of the universe has seen The Dark Knight by now, and James Newton Howard did that music too.
Half of the universe.
So, I just want to say that's something to look forward to, I think.
Let's really hope they have a soundtrack out. And hope they involve the track team in the finale, too.
Yeah.
So that'd be epic. Okay, one more.
I also like the battle music after Aang got his Ponage Ball when he was chasing Ozai. That was also very awesome music.
I didn't want to play that one.
I'm not sure they have that one.
Let me find it. Wait, did the track team update with all this stuff?
No, I don't think so, but I can play the audio when it comes over.
So wait, what moment is it?
While you're looking for that, I just want to make a quick point about animation real fast, just as fast as I can. They talked in the pilot. They showed that when if you watch the unaired pilot on the season one box set DVD, they talk about the CGI that they had in the pilot. There, if you watch the pilot, you would know there is a lot of CGI that they had in that. The original concept was to have a lot of CGI, and there was a ton of it, and they brought that back for the finale. What they talked about in the pilot was how that took so much work, and that looking back, they didn't use nearly as much CGI as they did for the pilot. And just giving them credit for the finale, they put that much CGI in it. It worked, and it just shows how much effort they put into this final season 3 finale thing. It almost blows my mind. This whole animation and music, all of it.
Yeah, I mean, the scene.
Yeah, like that scene where Aang's, where the camera's going from Ozai's point of view, he's going through the pillars. That was just beautiful, right there.
Yeah, and the CGI scene that really stands out to me is the one from the music I played earlier, the one that shows all the airships and then zooming out.
Yes, the airships.
Although,
CGI,
do you see now what I was saying about last podcast, how they're, the frame rate could have been better?
I kind of like it how it is. I mean, I think it makes it a little more epic-ish. But yeah, I see what you mean. A little bit. Okay, I think I have the battle music from... Tell me if this is wrong, Ben.
That's right.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. That was when he's crashing through the pillars.
I guess maybe my final comment on the music is I play cello. I'm in our school's orchestra and everything, and I can tell you that how really good that music is. And believe me, that's some of the most beautiful music that I've ever anywhere. So
okay, and I've got one more final clip to play. I think you all noticed final scene. I'm gonna analyze the music here once more. I think I did it last one. Let's do it again though.
You all look perfect.
This is where the guitar hugging.
Everyone's
and then stop right there because this is a fake out ending for this reason is that right where I'm paused, there's an end shot with the zoomed out, and this is the music. This is Luke Tripp called this one "Into a Nighttime Sky." Into the Nighttime Sky. This is what they play at the very end of the show. When they're all happy and stuff, the do-do-do-do. And they made it a little more lighthearted for the whole romantic scene. So, and then we go back out and it's like, oh, it's the end. But then they go back in and I'll play or zoom in.
I guess I do have one more.
Okay, let's wait. First, we have the Cat Aang theme, the do 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 do, and then we go to the ending. So that's Cat Aang theme. That's what played in Cave of Two Lovers, and then they transition to the whole epic kiss at the end. I think it's a little bit of a rendition of the. They keep the same Cat Aang theme beat and go into a new thing, and then the whole end, and then the ending music, the very end when they put the end up. So the perfect music for that scene, and that. This tops my list of favorite music of the show, favorite animation of the show. I just can't get any better in that final scene.
And I do have one final comment.
Okay.
I think everyone knows I'm Zutarian. Everyone knows I'm Tang. Everyone knows that I don't like Katang. And I just want to say that just listening to that music and thinking about what has happened in the show, I got just huge chills, and it's just, I mean, you gotta appreciate it. You have to appreciate what's happened over the past year, and just I don't want to just stand up and clap for it right now. It's just that we're on a podcast, so. But, I mean,
thank you for that, Josh. But yeah, it's, I agree with that. I mean, I still have my final beef, and I'm gonna go over it again today. But they pulled that final scene off so beautifully, and it went so well with the rest of the show and the building up to it. I mean, and I guess we'll transition to this more towards the end of the podcast when I kind of explain my rants a little more. But I don't know. Let's save it.
Okay. I also want to say one more thing.
Okay.
And I'm sorry for keeping going off topic, but I forgot to say this while we were talking about the lion turtle. I know nothing about Chinese mythology or whatever, but I remember that old Aladdin movie about the golden hand and everything, and it was on a giant turtle floating in the ocean, so it's obviously significant in some way, and I hope we can find out more about that.
Yeah. I get that. It's pretty much the same. I know it's significant. It's just like, what are the details? So I'd love to learn about that if anyone can send in a good article on the turtle's significance in Asian culture or something. Mythology. So yeah, I guess.
Did you guys talk about the Previously On music last week?
Oh, that was good too.
Okay. I think we got enough of the music.
Yeah, can we move on?
Yeah.
Because I'm about to get really emotional.
We spent like an hour on the music. But it's amazing job, track team. Great.
Yeah.
And whoever else helped them with the music was just amazing. Okay, voice actors.
Okay.
I don't know what points anyone wanted to make here. I have a story. But
I just want to say my voice acting award for the series definitely goes to Gray Leslie. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything. And I actually have a question. I'm not sure if anybody here can answer it, but if somebody out there does know. I read somewhere that I think someone thought that Gray Leslie did the voice not only for Katara's mother, but also for Yanra's mother. Can anybody confirm this on the podcast?
Yanra's mother?
Yeah. Can anybody here confirm that?
No, because it would be under additional voices.
Okay.
And they wouldn't list it specifically in the credits, so no, I can't confirm.
Okay, so nobody can...
I think that was her, though. I can't... Okay. If you want me to go, I'll check right now. Keep talking.
Okay. And while you're doing that, I just want to say, in direct contrast to all my other feelings about the character, my least favorite voice acting, admittedly, has to go to Toph.
That's very interesting.
Jessie Flower, she's been all over the place all of season 3.
I was about to say the exact opposite.
And as much as I hate to admit it, it's been really holding me back from liking Toph as much as I could.
Okay, I have a confirmation for your thing. Not an unconfirmation. Bonnie McNeil did the voice for Rania's mother. I assume, because there's two people listed under additional voices, and Dee Bradley and Bonnie McNeil, so I'm assuming it's Bonnie McNeil did the voice for Rania. Rania's mother in 316.
I still love
her. I want to hear him play my favorite voice acting real quick. This is...
They did not deserve to exist in this world. Oh, wow. In my world. Prepare to join them. Prepare to die.
Gotta give huge credit to Mark Hamill there.
I would have given... here's why I didn't give Mark Hamill the award, and it's not his fault. It's because he wasn't in it enough.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the only reason he doesn't get the award, because, I mean, he wasn't given as much of a chance as Gray Leslie was.
And okay.
Every time she was up there, she performed. Katara's mother, Hope Tara, everything.
Yeah. Okay, so now...
I would give an award to Dante Basco for Zuko and Iroh's reunion.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
that was wonderful.
His performance, it just made me so emotional. Yeah. It was really good.
And my honorable mention does go to Mako.
Yeah.
And Greg Baldwin is proof of that, because, I mean, as good as Greg Baldwin was, that just proves that as much talent as they can find for the show, you can't beat Mako.
I agree with that.
So, that's my honorable mention.
Okay. So, yeah, as we mentioned earlier, Kevin Michael Richardson did the voice of the Lion Turtle. In direct contrast to Josh, my voice acting award for the finale goes to Toph and Jessie Flower. I think, I don't know what it was about her.
Oh,
her voice may have been off a little bit from Toph, But it was so... But then again, you have to figure it. Toph was way more emotional in the finale than she ever was before. And I think Jessie Flower hit it dead on. And I just loved her voice for this
I think Jessie Flower was dead on during the whole finale. I'm talking about everywhere else. She's just been all over the place.
Yeah, I don't know. I disagree. I think... I mean, I don't know. She's one of my favorite
Especially in 317, obviously. I mean, that wasn't her fault because of the bad writing. But, I mean, even still...
I don't see it. I don't know. I liked her. I mean, just thinking when she was like, I want to go with Zuko on the field. Everyone else is that. And then...
Well, no, I agree. In the finale, she was spot on.
Yeah, that's what I just said. Thank you for quoting me. But yeah, it was amazing. I don't know.
That's my voice acting comments, unless someone else brings something up.
Props to Keone Young, who did the voice of the High Sage. All hail, Fire Lord Zuko.
I mean, Azula.
Yeah.
He probably got so sick of saying that, like, 50 times a day.
Yeah, it was good, though. I have another one here. Let's go back to 317. It's going to take me a while to get
it. I'm starving.
No, I got it. I got it up right here. Because this was a complicated voice acting episode, as we saw, because there's so many people. Let's get to it. Actress Yue was played by Jenny Kwan, who does the voice of Suki. Zach did the kid. I think we went over this, but...
I don't remember that.
Yeah. The kid was played by Zach Taylor, as in the little kid who's like, your scars on the wrong side. That was the voice actor of Aang. Actress Aang was played by Rachel Dratch, who, if you know SNL, she was a former, I think, SNL cast member. Very impressive casting for that, and she did an amazing job. And actress Katara, played by Greta Leslie, amazing. Actress Azula, Tara Strong, who also does the voice for Timmy in Fairly Odd Parents. Very good. She's one of my favorite voice actors, too. Oh, and we got actor Sokka, played by Scott Menville. Amazing. He's Lloyd.
He's
Lloyd from Tales of Symphonia. He's also Robin from Teen Titans. I love him. He's so great. Actor Zuko. Derek Bosco. Not sure about that one. I think it might be his brother.
He was one of the hippies in Cave of Two Lovers.
Oh, he was?
Like that, what was his
that
name?
That guy? Okay, then yeah, that's probably
Moku. The guy who played the drums, that dude.
Moku.
Yeah, Moku. That's
cool.
Okay. Actor Toph, actor Uncle John DiMaggio, don't know about him. And actor Boomy, actor Jet was done by D. Bradley Baker. Incredible. Hey, baby. I would love D even more for that. Okay, any other voice acting stuff?
Well, there's the Aang voice thing that we're talking about under Josh/Jeff stuffs, but I guess we can keep that
separate. Okay, yeah, let's see. Okay, Josh, start your stuff. Lord of the Rings.
First segment, more significant. The first thing I wanted to bring up that was not brought up, I guess maybe because not everyone noticed it, if you watch Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, there's the scene where Aragorn is being crowned King of Gondor, and he says, "Do not cheer for me, for it is Frodo, who, I don't know the exact quote, but for it is Frodo who is the real hero." And I know it wasn't intentional. I'm not accusing it of being intentional, but it just seemed like a really bad parody of that when you think of it that way. That's really all I wanted to say.
I don't know, they could have done it on purpose. I've read in the past they're Lord of the Rings fans, so.
Yeah.
You know, if I was sitting in that crowd, I would have been so miffed at Zuko for saying that just because he didn't do nearly as much as Aragorn did from Lord of the Rings, so it's like, you think we're cheering for you? Because it makes no sense.
Gosh.
Yeah, Zuko really didn't help at all.
He got shot by the lady.
Because Katara was so stupid to go out there.
She just ran out of nowhere.
She's standing there, but she beat Azula.
Zuko played the part of the sandbag. Zuko played the part of the sandbag in the entire series, actually.
Yeah, he did. Okay, next thing on your list, Jeff.
He got Dane Bramaged. This is something that Jeff brought up to me, and I had noticed it before, but I didn't think it was significant enough, but apparently it is. I guess it is. Azula ear blasts. When she is rolling around on the floor, I got files.
Oh my gosh. Just keep talking, please.
I'm sorry. Yeah, she has ear blasts out of. She's blasting fire out of her ears, and I think this is a new firebending technique that we haven't seen yet. So.
I did not notice that.
I guess props to Azula for discovering this secret ancient.
I think she was so crazy that she just had fire coming out of her ears.
Earbending technique.
This is
literally.
Yeah, Jeff.
This is her secret method of how she's going to escape from jail. She's like, guard, can you come here and check my earwax? Because I can't deal with this straight jacket on.
Check my earwax.
But then again, could she only do that during the comet, and that's why we haven't seen it yet?
Ah. This is very important discussion. Wow. Okay, let's move on.
That's something to be brought up on IMDb.
You have a
Josh, next thing.
Last thing is Aang's voice. His
Basically, I was.
It's Jeff's thing. I'll let Jeff talk.
All right. So I was you know watching the finale over and over and over again, and then I go onto this YouTube video from 309, and I hear Aang talking. I'm like, that cannot be right. Someone has messed with his voice because it sounds too high. But no, I watched it on my computer. And it's right. So I'm gonna put together some clips. I'm gonna play them right now, and it's just it's not gonna be as funny as it was for me. Because but yeah, hold on.
Because we're expecting it.
Just what, Katara? What?
And I realized some big things, Katara.
Hey, I do understand. It's just
staying up all night can't be good for you.
That's not how high his voice is. That's slightly higher than he actually was.
Yeah, so, we've heard that they pitched it, but that's amazing.
I didn't even get half of what you just picked. So yeah, staying up all night and then
This is puberty at work, ladies.
You know, actually, I don't think so. I think this is something different because
this is the real coming of age tale that.
Okay, this really shows. It's because this shows Aang's maturity in the finale. He fully realized Avatar State. Blah blah blah. It's in the finale.
Avatar State equals testosterone.
Yes, it really does. I would not be surprised.
But they also seemed like Katara's voice really changed.
Voice really.
I mean, the second half of that thing was Katara. Let me play it again.
Yeah, play it
Hey,
again.
Whitman's already matured, though, isn't she?
Yeah, she's like...
Just what, Katara? What?
And I've realized some big things, Katara.
Aang, we do understand. It's just...
Aang, staying up all night can't be good for you.
No, your 309 clips are off. It wasn't that high.
It was that high. I tell you.
Could it be that you're playing that from... I mean, I know you saw it on YouTube, too, but, like, could it be that... Your audio is different after recording it on TV as opposed to coming out on DVD. Could that be it?
Possible, but I've watched a lot of episodes on TV and on the computer, and I haven't noticed a significant difference. Huh. So,
whatever,
I don't know.
Looking at, oh, there's the air blast. I just got the pictures. Yep, that's definitely urban.
Urban. Wow. How many buildings do we have? We need to make a list sometime.
Let me look for this scene and give it to them there. Oh wow, I have it right to the Forever Girl scene paused on my iTunes. I wonder why. Okay, let me play it here.
But being a mayor, Dylan.
I know.
All aboard for the invasion. You don't look so good. You sure you can't just lie down for a little nap?
I told you, I can't go back to sleep.
Aang, staying up all night can't be good for you.
Actually, staying up all night has given me some time to think.
Yeah, that's not as high as your clip.
Really? It seems just the same to me.
Really? I don't know. That seems a little high. But yeah, it definitely is different. Let me get something from the
front. Yeah, and if you listen to
Dylan. Wow, that's two in one night, Dylan. I agree with you.
Whoa.
You're on a roll.
That's not possible.
But
let me play this here.
Negan, but we're not. Aang, I don't know. Why don't you know? Because we're in the middle of a war, and we have other things to worry about. This isn't the right time. Well, when is the right time?
Okay, Aang's voice is a tad deeper, but I think Katara's the same.
Okay.
Agree, disagree?
I don't... I'm just...
I couldn't tell over Skype. I mean, that's just how it is, but...
Yeah, for me, it's... I don't know. Oh, no, okay, if you want to talk about Aang's voice, there's one thing in the finale. This huge shift from the Avatar State voice to his own voice when he got out of the Avatar State that struck me.
The Avatar State was just so...
I want to play
awesome.
For you guys.
Oh, yeah.
That wasn't there.
I'll just make a comment. I got my biggest throwback for me, like the thing that floored me the most during the whole finale, besides the Azula Zuko Agni Kai, was when Ozai blasts Aang out of his Earth Ball, and we have that cutscene with the Avatar State and Roku and Kyoshi and all the Avatars. And then it shows Roku saying, "Come out, little boy," or whatever. And then all of a sudden, out of the rocks, just shoots this glowing arm. And I just, like, everybody that was on my couch just went, "Oh my god!"
Yeah, okay, now
we were freaking out on the finale call.
Okay, let me play the clip right now. I think this is it. Fast forward. Rewind. Wait, did I miss the point where he said, where he's talking in the Avatar State voice?
Oh,
yeah.
I can't see it.
I think you skipped this a bit.
This is way back, so he's grabbing in the water and bringing it down. So the, just that dramatic shift from "You shall pay the ultimate price," and it's ended on just ordinary things. And no, I'm not gonna end it.
Something that was rather dark for the series. I mean, with the positions that Aang put Ozai in, like the first one where he's like got his arms spread out and his legs, and they're trapped with earthbending, and like he's laying there on the ground and he's like spread out. I thought that was really almost kind of dark. I thought that was the most violent, and you know, not, I mean, it wasn't violent obviously, but it was the most suggesting, you know. I mean, when you think of all the kinds of when you think of the things that kind of position suggests, and then when. And something else I thought was odd was when he lets Ozai go, but then Ozai tries to attack him. So he puts him in another position where his arms are in this are in these pillars, and he's down on his knees and he's like leaning back.
Well, I think the second position was less violent than the first one.
Well, yeah, I agree, but that's, you know, that's Aang. Yeah. But
that move is what I wanted to talk about, because in my second blog post, I said Toph should do that kind of thing with Combustion Man, and finally someone does something smart.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so I have one more voice thing to point out. Just, I don't know, I think I have a very spot.
Zula? It does seem appropriate, but what about you?
Fire Lord Ozai is no more.
Fire Lord Ozai is no more.
His face looks so
but
kind.
But now I will stroke my goatee.
I don't know what accent that is, but Ozai. 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 I kept repeating that in my head after he said it. I found that really funny.
It's weird. Maybe it's just me, but his face looks so kind in this scene. Like,
it kind of does, yeah.
Like just some regular dad and his daughter.
Ozai. Fire Lord Ozai. Okay, let's go.
Tell me more about this Fire Lord.
Okay, yeah. Jeff and Josh, start with Aang wearing 09318. Start with your point.
Yep, do you want to bring this up since it was
your... It struck me that in 309, Aang is preparing to face the Fire Lord during an eclipse, so he's going to have no firebending, and he's freaking out. I mean, we have a whole episode of him freaking out. And in 319, or 318, he's preparing to face, both of them, he's preparing to face a Fire Lord who's going to be superpowered by a comet, and he's worrying about what he's going to do after he beats him. Should I kill him, or what should I do? And it makes no sense.
And he brought this up, and I really can't come up with a good answer.
You want me to talk? I got one.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. I mean, I can't come up with a good
answer. I have 2 points here to make. First of all, 309, Aang doesn't really have anything to think about. He's fighting Ozai. That's it. Like, there's nothing really to worry about. I mean, in 318, he's directly been told he has to kill Ozai. And he has this dilemma on his hands. And he's not thinking about the fight. He's distracted by, can I actually do this? Can I do something that goes against all principles that I've ever done? It's a moral question. Once it's presented to him, nothing else matters. And maybe that's why there wasn't any Cat Aang there, because, like, nothing else is going on in Aang's head. It's just this question. And that's why you thought, it's like, he sees this lion turtle, and the first thing he asks him is about that. So I think that's halfway. And then secondly, he's 309, it's the first time he's been worrying about this. It's the final battle, he thinks. And then he goes through this, and then we hit 318. He's already been through it. It's like, it's a second time. He knows it's coming. He knows to be more prepared now. Explain.
Go ahead, Josh.
Oh, I'm just gonna say, I'm not sure if it's a theory or not. What I'm gonna say, but I mean, it almost makes you think about how much the spirits are concerned about the war. Because I mean, if we see in 318 and 319, they start to have more of an influence on things. But in 309, we didn't have any spirit world stuff. So it's almost as if everybody knew the invasion was going to fail.
Well, Lion Turtle's not spirit world. The spirits didn't have any influence in the finale. Oh, let me add that to the outline. But yeah, Aang called on Roku and everyone, and the Lion Turtle was acting on his own. And Roku didn't know what the Lion Turtle was. It was the first time it ever came up. So really, they didn't influence.
I guess and I'm really not even still. I'm still not really even convinced that, your explanation does it for me. Because I'm still not convinced. I mean,
Aang worrying.
Yeah.
He's going on this whole epic adventure on this lion turtle. When do you want him to worry? That's what I guess what I'm asking.
Well, my question is, why wasn't he worrying about killing Ozai back in 309?
Well, no one ever brought it up to him. Zuko didn't ask that question to him in 316.
So, I mean, I guess that may have
It didn't really sink in.
The invasion was going to fail anyway. As much as he was worrying, it's almost as if they expected the invasion to fail.
Well, he didn't know. I mean, he didn't even think about it. Because it never occurred to him that he might have to kill him. I guess he always thought he'd just lock him up.
And I guess that shows more of Aang's maturity?
No, not really. It just shows that... I don't think that's maturity
He didn't think things through before going into the evasion, and then so now he's
thinking... Well, that's not really thinking things through, is it? I mean, it's just that this whole thing... Because we only assumed that he would have to kill him because that's just the way it seemed. It's like, that's the way to end an epic show, right? But to Aang, you can lock him in prison. I mean, he's never killed anyone before. It's not like he has to defeat him. They always use the word defeat.
Okay, I think I'm starting to see what you're saying. Okay.
You see, it's like...
Yeah.
To Aang, it's not even... He's never... It came up in his head. So, really, until Zuko brings it up to him, it's not a problem, I guess.
So, I guess that may go along with the show being from... pretty much always from Aang's point of view, Aang and Zuko's point of view. It's like, we think what Aang thinks, we know what Aang knows, almost, maybe.
Well, actually, I think this is an opposite proof to that this time, because as an audience, we always think he's going to have to kill Ozai, right? But Aang never thinks that. So I guess a point against it, but we always hear the word defeat.
We're not in Aang's point of view, but what we're presented with in the show is a lot of the times...
Yes, it is.
Aang. Okay.
That's one of my theories.
I can live with that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to get into Aang's mind. I mean, I think I have more of an Aang's point of view than most people do. But, I mean, I'd hope I did, because I'm a vegetarian. I care a lot about this type of stuff Aang does. But, yeah. Okay, that good for the... That
Jeff, bullet point does that up? Answer... Does that satisfy you?
Jeff.
Yeah. In silence, just say yes.
Does that satisfy you, our explanation?
Hello, can anyone hear me?
Jeff, yeah. Can you hear us?
Yeah, yes, Jeff.
Hello?
Okay, he can't hear us, so...
Uh-oh.
Technical difficulties there. We'll work it out. Okay, let's move... Let's prelude Crazula first. I have something to say. Not okay. Prelude at all. Spirit World. Here's almost a disappointment for me that we didn't get to see the Spirit World again in the finale. I mean, it's not really... it's a disappointment. I don't know. I guess it's because Jake's always said, we're going to see Ko, we're going to see Ko, we're going to see Ko. We did see Ko, but not how we thought we'd see Ko. And it was almost more of a, seriously, Jake? Or Jake's contact? But yeah, that's what it was. And we didn't see the Spirit World. I don't know. I think if there was a Spirit World scene, it would have made it 10 times more epic. I don't know. It was unnecessary, but somehow I would just wish they threw it in there.
I was wanting some more Spirit World. I'm gonna have to agree with you. I wanted more Spirit World. I'm not sure if I bought the line too. I'll look back and I'll be like, you know what? Who cares? It was so amazing.
It was. Yeah, I did buy the line.
At this point, I'm really kind of wishing they didn't, you know, change their standard and make something up new about the Lion Turtle. I mean, even though they were planning it from the beginning. Still, I kind of wish they would have kept...
Well, it's not changing their standard, and this is how you guys have to look at it from Lion Turtle. This is theme they've been building since episode one. We've got this... Remember, we kept going over this, guys, early in the show, the whole main theme concept, love, hate. I was anticipating this. I didn't actually have spoilers on the Lion Turtle, but I knew this was coming. This is what they've been building up theme-wise. Not plot-wise, but this presents itself in the whole...
And what theme was this?
Love,
have you ever just...
love, hate. It's the thing I said was the main theme. Love, hate as in killing the Fire Lord, love as in what prevails at the end. Which he doesn't have to. And it's really, it's been foreshadowed a ton, if you have looked at it, but...
Not the specific Lion Turtle.
Not the specific Lion Turtle, but the whole...
But this confrontation
conclusion,
thing.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And I guess, and the Lion Turtle was really the only way to do it, because the Spirit World was blocked off, apparently. So I guess we couldn't really see the Spirit World at all, because it was blocked. But I don't know, I just want to see it. It's so epic. Wish they worked it in.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I guess it's more of an oh well type of thing.
Yeah, you lose a lot.
It's too epic to really complain too much. Okay, Crazula. Josh, you want to start off?
Crazula, do you want me... Okay, time to get warmed up. Okay. Rub my hands.
Was that me?
Well, Jeff linked us to a blog post on... Not a blog post, a forum post on DF, and... It goes into it a lot more in depth than I'm going to.
No, it's just the second post that I wanted to talk about.
So yeah, the second post.
The second post comes from Nick.com, and I've since looked it up, and it's real. It says what happens to Azula.
I'll read it, I guess. It says here, imagine being betrayed by your best friends, abandoned by your mother, and humiliated by your brother. It's enough to make any teenage girl act a little nutty. Add to that the pressure of becoming Fire Lord and running an entire nation by herself, and Azula was bound to crack sooner or later. After Zuko defeated her in the Agni Kai, Azula was shipped off to a mental health facility on a nearby island where she is supervised around the clock.
Obviously Nick made that up, that last sentence, but Nick.com has been known to make stuff up. So we can't really take that into account. This is just their interpretation of it, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, well, I don't know. It's not a rant. I'm gonna make that clear. This is definitely not a rant. This is definitely not a disapproval of something that happened. So, this is more of a. This is more like what I did of 317. An exclamation of praise. I guess I'll call it.
Okay.
Start at the beginning. What's the very first? What's our very first impression of Azula back in? I mean, even the very before we even hear her speak. 112. Alright, we didn't learn immediately that it was Zuko's sister, but that screenshot of her, where Iroh's looking away, Zhao's looking on ominously. Zhao's not really. I'm not sure he's cheering.
He's practicing for the Olympics.
But Zhao's looking on ominously, and so is like War Minister Ken and all those people. But who's the one person that is, you know, like, yeah, it's happening, yeah. You know, who's the one person? It's Azula. Azula's the one that's got her fist clenched, and she's like, yeah, I'm going to win. You know, she's the only person. Okay, next time we see her, I'm not going to talk about 120. That's not a big deal. 201. We see her, the very first time we see her actual character, you know, doing something. She's on a boat, and she pones a guy in the face with words without even fighting him. She just says,
"The tides.
Do the tides control this ship, or?"
epic writing by Aaron.
Yeah. The amazing Azula word ponage.
Word ponage.
And then the next scene, lightning bending. Epic lightning bending. It's all, according to Lowen Lee, almost perfect, just a hair out of place. Perfect's not good enough. So our impression of Azula at the very beginning is she's perfect, and she's a perfectionist, and she's not going to stop. She's going to be this unstoppable thing all of season 2. Next time we see her, 203, she loses barely, and it's only because of Bumi, because she didn't know that Bumi could earth it. 207 was strange, because, obviously it was a strange episode. I'm not gonna try to hang on to this too long. Actually, I won't even comment on it, because my Azula thing about 207 is way too in-depth. Skipping that, 208, the chase, she loses, but only because 6 people ganged up on her.
Yeah.
It's the only reason. What's the next one? 213, the drill. She loses because she's fighting on top of a giant drill against the Avatar, who, you know, I mean, that's not too much discrediting her. And then the next time we see her is 216, and she beats the Kyoshi Warriors, pwns all the Kyoshi Warriors. She didn't even need Mei and Ty Lee, she could have just taken them all. 218, she's in the Kyoshi Warrior costume. 219, she's taken out Boss Yingxie from the inside. 220, she is overpowering Aang severely. I mean, Aang's mostly concentrated on earthbending, and I guess, you know, that could, you know, you could comment on that, but, I mean, laying down the law, she's pwning everybody, and then on top of that, she kills...
Well, she's also losing to Katara earlier in the 220 battle.
True, but,
Yeah, but I mean, she is beating Aang, which is an important...
She's beating Aang, and then she kills him. I mean...
Literally.
she kills him, and the only reason he's alive is because of Katara.
You stop right there. I mean, Azula's character, it's so powerful. Here's this... She pretty much single-handedly took over the biggest city in the world. She seems unbeatable here. And yet, watch what happens.
Dylan's amplifying what I'm thinking inside right now.
Yeah,
I mean, I spaz over Azula more than anybody. So, but other than that person that wrote that on Dongbufeng, I can't do that.
Well, it was a link to ASN.
That was ridiculous.
It was by self-possessed on ASN. That was that.
No, it's on Dongbufeng.
I know, he was just...
Oh, it's on
ASN. He was reposting ASN. Something. Oh, that was self-possessed on DF2. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, and the next... And so our impression with Azula at the beginning of 201 is the same as it is at the end of 220. She's a perfectionist, and she pwns everybody that gets in her way. Alright. Yeah. 301, she is still up to her devious ways, even though... This is where she starts to slip. This is where she makes her mistake. I mean, I guess her first mistake was being born into Ozai's family. I mean, that you can't win in that situation.
Well, it could be a blessing too.
But her first mistake is, you know, trying to do stuff when there's not really anything to do. She makes this plan. She tries to expose Zuko for something. She's not even sure that, you know, anything happened. I mean, she's almost showing doubt in herself. You know, she's doubting herself that, you know, in case I didn't kill him, I better cover my tracks. And really, it's unnecessary. I mean, we found out that it is necessary. But, I mean, even in the end, it doesn't matter because Zuko's the one that tells Ozai the truth, not Azula. And, you know, it really doesn't help her any.
You know, I disagree here. I think this is Azula being Azula. She is making sure the job... She's playing people. She's playing Zuko. She's trying to get all the information. Yeah. I think this is her being her. I don't think she's slipping at all yet.
Oh, this is her character flaw, though. Her character flaw is being way too Azula-y.
Okay, I agree with that.
Yeah,
she's being, almost too.
This is the start of. I mean, obviously, this isn't where it culminates, but this is where it starts. Is she's trying to do stuff, and there's not really anything to do right now. I mean, you're back home. everyone's on your side, basically. I mean, there's really, there's no need for it right now.
No, I disagree with that. I think it wasn't the fact that she was too, it was like nothing to do, because the need was there. I think it's just that sometimes she can play people too much, sometimes she can be too devious, overthink things too much.
I think
I don't know if this is a good example of what I agree with the overall point. But I don't know if I like this.
And then it just continues all of season three, trying to control people, and then the big part, this is where I wanted to comment on my opinion of Azula. Azula is and always will be my second favorite, next to Toph, and really it might as well be a tie. She's my favorite, and my impression of her, from season two, was she's perfect. Why are we changing that? Why are we changing this? Because I've brought up before, when I saw the NYCC trailer, I was almost upset because of Azula going crazy, because I didn't like that for her character. I wanted her to stay the same, you know, pretty much the entire time, and, you know, go down in her prime, because that's how her character needed to go down. But then, but it still happened that way, and, you know, I commented on 317 about how, in the 317 pod, or 316, I think it was the 316 podcast, on how I still, even though I wasn't, you know, a big fan of it, I'm okay with it. And this just shows, this was really the big surprise for me for the finale, was, I mean, not the big, you know what I'm saying, it's like,
big wow.
Yeah, the big wow. That's it. Big
for me too.
Because I knew she was gonna. We all pretty much knew that she was going crazy by 3:16.
Mm-hmm.
We all knew that was gonna happen. But then the way it happens, Jeff. We commented in our trailer discussion, me, Jeff, and Lisa, on how Azula was really kind of pouting in that palanquin. And mm-hmm. we saw, and it was pretty much confirmed when she yells at the palanquin better. It's, hey, go faster! You're only carrying what, me? Go faster!
Yeah.
So she gets up there, and then Ozai says, "You're staying here. You're not going off to fight the big war."
Boom! She's final strike.
Oh man, what? She's pouting even more. But like, then Ozai makes his big mistake, is he leaves her alone with way, way, way too much power.
I mean, I disagree. I mean, he has to trust her sometime. I don't think that's a mistake on Ozai's part.
But, I mean, knowing that it's... I mean, knowing, assuming Ozai had even won. Assuming Ozai had won. With Azula's character, what makes you think she wasn't playing this whole thing to get to the
Phoenix? That's true. I mean, Ozai doesn't know that... Ozai trusts
Azula,
her.
I mean,
that's
Ozai
not a bad thing. Ozai needs to trust one person.
But, I mean...
The thing is, he should know. I mean... Like Azula
he's
operates
the one
through
person you can't trust.
Yeah.
Well, see, can't Azula trust. I mean, Azula never did betray him.
She didn't. But
that surprised me.
If you notice how she backlashed at Lo and Lee, she said, "Hey, did my dad did father send you to do?"
She's skeptical. Yes.
Yeah. So that's. I mean, that's the first time you know wonder about it. And even in the war meeting, her dad, Ozai. Ozai's like, you know, trying to be all cool, and he's like, "Well, what should we do, Zuko?" And she gets sick of it, and she just says, "Just kill him.
Just burn it all to the ground."
He's burn
like,
it all to
yes,
she's,
that's a good idea.
As if she's fed up with how long this is taking.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and all of it, obviously, it culminates, she keeps going crazier and crazier and crazier. And finally, you know, the Agni Kai happens. I'm not going to talk too much about it, about the first part, but the final part with Katara, I mean, did you realize how weak Katara's waterbending was? She was skating around on all that ice, but I mean, it's not like she had a shortage of water.
She did have a shortage of water. That's why she couldn't help
out. Because Azula kept burning it up.
Yeah, there's a little bit of water underneath,
even,
and that was all
even,
she had to work with.
Even still, Katara, you know, obviously at the disadvantage here. I mean, she's beaten Azula before, but I mean
no
that
comment.
Was back. But all the, so yeah, your comment was worth something, Dylan.
I don't remember complaining about that.
But anyway, you know, and somehow, I mean, we know how, but you know, Katara still is able to beat her, And it isn't Katara that beats her. It's Azula that beats herself. I mean, yeah. You can say... I mean, ignoring, you know, what actually happened in the battle...
ignoring the actual episode. Exactly. Azula beat herself. It's true, though. I agree.
You know what I mean, though. You know what I'm trying to
say. Yeah, I do. I know what you mean.
And then the ultimate moment where it all culminates for me is she's chained to the grate.
Yes, yes.
She, at first, she tries to fight around. She snuffs fire out of her ears and out of her mouth, and she screams and stuff, kicks and screams. But then we see it. Azula starts to bawl her effing eyes out.
Yep.
And this just blew my mind whenever I think about where we started with her. And now we're ending with her.
I agree.
And that is why I think this should be the last comment for me on my big exclamation of praise. And that is why this is the writers being geniuses, taking a one-dimensional character. I mean, if you think about it, Azula is a one-dimensional character. And because of all the complexity and all the plot complications that happened around her, her one dimension gets lost, and she goes down this path of self-destruction, and eventually, she's all she has left in the end, chained to a grate, bawling her eyes out. Yeah. And, I mean, whenever I try to wrap my mind around that, it's just so incredible that the writers were able to come up with such a concept like that.
Yeah. And, you know, I just want to comment on this. This is my favorite plot aspect of the finale. It was so incredible seeing her go crazy. Her just posture in the finale, the way she shot the firebending, her laugh, and it was amazing. And I just want to comment on how she went crazy again, in case, I mean, we've been over it before, just again. It's not really the first straw, but the first major thing, she loses her two friends. It's two people, really, she's only close to, and, like, who else does she have? We've seen 305, she doesn't, her mother doesn't love her, or didn't love her, and then...
And that contributed more than I thought it was going to.
Yeah, really.
That was back incredible. When I was still stuck that Azula was this perfect person that was going to go down fighting.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, that was just, they just did that because that was the mood of the episode. That was the mood of the beach. But now I look back on it, and, you know, it did have an impact. It shows
I don't think that that Mei and Ty Lee were... I don't think the loss of her friends was what started tipping. I mean, I think it was just her seeing herself lose influence, or not having as much influence as she had.
Yeah,
she'd been controlling them all their lives with fear and intimidation, and now she sees they're still capable of rebelling against her.
Yeah, her fear can't do everything. And then, I mean, and then her father, at the end, the final straw I said was, she lost her best friends, her mom has been lost, Zuko's gone and betrayed her. That's another thing thrown in her side. So her father's all she has left, and her father doesn't trust her with going into the final battle with her there. She's no one. No one loves her.
I don't know about that. I mean,
tell me who loves her.
Who loves her?
Who loves Azula?
Nobody loves her.
Her mom loves her,
Dylan.
Subconscious talking, trying to tell her what she wanted, but Azula was rejecting the idea. She's like, no, you've always hated me, and no one loves me. And that's really, I think, in the end, why she goes crazy.
Here's another reason why this is Ozai's biggest mistake. Do you think that Aang would have still won if Azula was fighting alongside Ozai?
Probably
Well,
not.
Yes, because Zuko and Katara would have been with him. In
the final. No, because Zuko and Katara...
They were sent to the Fire Nation Palace.
Zuko and Katara... How did Iroh know that Ozai was going to leave?
Iroh knows everything. Shush.
Iroh's like a psychic now.
I can tell.
Iroh just knows his brother too well. He just knows his brother.
Exactly, yeah, he knows that what Ozai would do.
But Ozai's biggest mistake. He lost, and he left Azula alone. If he had brought Azula with him, and Zuko and Katara had gone onto the fire... You know, deja vu. Where are you, Fire Lord? Why aren't you following?
Yeah. I don't know.
Then they beat Aang. They come back and they lay waste to Zuko and Katara, and it's all over. So again, Ozai's biggest mistake, I think.
No, I don't think so. Well, I think the thing where I just did a head desk so much Nifnarism. Azula banishes the Daili agents. I mean, how stupid can you be?
I don't know about that. I mean, because the Daili weren't going to be super powered by the comet. Zuko could have taken them out. Probably
no, I don't know. They would have made a huge difference.
What about Azula's lack of self-confidence when she dismisses the Daili? She says, in 5 minutes, an assassin could have snuck in here and beaten me.
Well, she was just making a point. I don't think that was really...
I guess, but I mean, still, it's almost like...
She was
like...
just looking for excuses to banish people.
Yeah.
It's probably true.
Yeah, see, it's just, that's such an epic storyline, her. And incredible. Azula at the end. It was the most wow of the finale, in my opinion. I mean... It was the thing that was left open the most. We knew pretty much what else was going to happen, I guess. With the rest, we knew generally what was going to be the outcome, but Azula, how Azula's downfall was. And just think of this. At the end of Season 2, the war is over. The Fire Nation has won. Azula is on top of... She's controlling the biggest city in the world. Ozai has control of the Fire Nation, has control of the world. And it goes from that in a couple months to the... them losing it all. It's just this, and it's because of the personalities of Ozai and Azula. Azula going crazy with just her losing it, and Ozai pretty much with his... He's too cocky, I guess.
I have one more point to make, and I think it's a really good one.
Okay.
Okay. Azula is the real villain of the show. And I'm going to start with that, because... And I'm going to go back and examine. We see... Ozai, my opinion of Ozai is more of a concept. Ozai is more of an idea. Until his real embodiment of 318, I mean, we never see him fight. I mean, Ozai
is... Yeah, we don't even see his face until Season 3.
Ozai,
I think he was a concept.
Ozai is just this concept. Ozai is not the real villain here. I think that, I mean, obviously he's the real villain, but you know what I'm saying? Azula turned out to be... I think you know what I'm saying.
Kinda, yeah. I mean, Azula's been more embodied.
And even when Ozai did finally get some, human traits and became human and, attacked Aang, even then, you realize that scene where Aang turns all blue and Ozai turns all red and Ozai tries to corrupt him, but then Aang comes back. We all know how it ends. And it's like red versus blue. That just reinforces the idea even more that Ozai is more of a concept than he is
I do think he is the main villain of the show. He's always been there. He's always been the target.
He's the main
Azula
villain.
Azula has been in the embodiment of...
Yes, you just took the word right out of my mouth. Of, like, I was like 2 seconds away from saying that.
She's the embodiment of...
Of Ozai's...
Hate. No, she's not hate. She's fire, evil. I guess.
She represents... Ozai represents the, Ozai represents the hatred...
Yes,
and,
I agree with that.
And, destructive qualities of the Fire Nation. But Azula represents the more personal aspect. As Azula's the one we see. Azula's the one that embodies what, Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I think,
I don't know, Michelle, because we still have the big one to discuss.
I think that even
we're
without
separate the two podcasts, by the way.
I think that even if Mane Tidley hadn't betrayed Azula, I think if she had been made Fire Lord, she would have gone down anyways. I mean, we haven't seen her as a leader as much as we have Ozai. Ozai was a good leader. He trusted his generals to tell him what was possible and what wasn't. You know, we saw in 201 Azula would not take no for an answer. And I don't think she would have made a good leader at all.
Yeah. I agree with that.
I think Ozai would have taken her out of leadership almost immediately.
Yeah. Once he comes back home and finds out what happens,
she's better on her own.
I don't know if she would have gone on a banishing tirade, but she would have done something stupid.
I don't know. Well, we can only speculate, I guess.
Well, we always have Season 4 to look forward to see what happens.
Okay, now I'm gonna separate this into 2-hour podcast. So we got Ben. I'm gonna let you in and have the final whatever. What was your rant on again?
Excuse me.
Coughing.
Mine on Iron Man in Avatar.
We need cough buttons here.
Okay. Well, as we all know, we have Iron Azula, Iron Ozai, Iron Zhong Zhong, and Iron Toph. Now, the Iron Toph I enjoyed because that was actually awesome. But I think they overkilled it a little bit for everybody else, because, I don't know, all of a sudden, starting in the Boiling Rock, everybody who's a firebender can fly!
Yeah.
I don't know. It's
well, it ended
just
up being necessary, because Ozai needed a way to get around in the final battle.
Yeah, well, I was wondering about that. I mean, how was he? I mean, he must have practiced, because,
yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
I mean, fine, but what about?
Is it? Oh, I'm. Were you, I don't want to interrupt your rant. Go ahead.
I don't and then continue.
What?
Go ahead, Josh.
No. Go, Ben. You're ending this.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So, I mean, I understand the finale because you know that makes sense. But why did it have to start with the Boiling Rock and then Azula does it and 316? I don't know. I liked it. It was just a little too much, I think, and it was a little too early to do it.
Ben is just an obsessive Iron Man fan and is disappointed that Avatar's cut you.
I am not an obsessive Iron Man. The first big Iron Man thing I watched was the recent Iron Man movie. That was it.
And you're dressed up as Iron Man.
Question, could it be... I mean, this is a just general question, too. I mean, this Ben, you bring up a good point. I mean, the comet... We see that they get their power from the comet when it's, you know, flying over Earth. But does its, you know, how near it is, does that have any effect upon, like, you know, is it like the, would it be like the moon where, you know, when it's a full moon, waterbenders are crazy, when it's a half moon, they're alright, and then when it's no moon, they suck? Is it kind of like that, when the comet is, like, right over them, they're, like, effing awesome, and then when it's like kind of getting near, they can start doing that Iron Man stuff? Do you think that might have anything to do with it?
Wow, that's a great question.
That's really a separate discussion.
You know, that's actually a good one. To be honest, though, I don't think the comet had anything to do with it. I guess, you know, all of a sudden, Azula thought, oh, maybe I can use my fire and fly. It may have had something to do with the comet, but I don't think it did. Because the comet wasn't near Earth enough to really catch fire in the atmosphere, so I don't think the comet had anything to do with
Iron
Man.
Oh, that's another thing I wanted to. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I need to quit.
No, I finished. I mean, I don't think the comet had anything on Iron Man.
Okay. One more thing about the comet. We talk about how it's a funny joke. I mean, you guys brought this up too. It's a funny joke. The comet is ice and rock. How does it empower firebenders? You guys brought up the point that it is the fire off the comet that maybe gives it off. I don't think that's what it is.
Atmosphere.
I think it's the energy. I think it's the energy that the comet brings that gives the firebenders their
incredible
power.
This is pure speed? It's kinetic energy?
Well, maybe that. But
I don't think
you get what I'm saying, though?
I get what you're saying. I get it. Because firebending is... No, firebending is heat bending. So heat, I guess, is energy, and I agree. I don't know. I guess you're just restating something in different words. I still like Jeff's theory though that the atmosphere, it's going through the atmosphere, which provides the fire, and the heat.
Well, it's not really a theory. I mean, we know that part. My theory is basically it can't do this forever, and it hasn't been doing it forever.
Well, I think that is a theory that. It is in the atmosphere, I guess.
Damn,
so you know
science laws and Avatar.
Yeah, I know, I love it. Okay, I think that's enough for here.
Questioning the logic of a show that obviously has
none. Okay, that's all for part one of more finale talk. This has been Podcast 47. More podcasts at DiamondFang.net, talk director AJ, Kevin Music Remixes by the Trip, by DiamondFang, I'm AJ. Let's end it with unison.
Iron Man.
Okay, and then
wait, guys.
Stay tuned because we're going on to part two.
Wait, guys.
Yeah.
Puppet Flakes.
Why Puppet
That's
Flakes?
My shout out to Jody.
Yeah, Puppet Flakes. That's
I did
some
it,
good
Jody.
Times. That's some good times. Okay. 1, 2, 3. Iron Man.
Iron Man.
There. I got a pretty good look at you.
Yes.
That wasn't a good play.
I'll say.
No kidding. Horrible. You said it.
But the effects were decent.